Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. Last week, we talked about the 29-year anniversary of the Philadelphia Church of God, which was December 7th. And we talked to my mother, who is an original 12 member of the church. This week, I have two more guests to talk about some of the history of God's church. Our first guest is also an original 12 PCG member and the daughter of the late John and Helen Amos, both of whom were founding members of the church, Mrs. Andrea Fraser.
Hi, nice to be here.
Good to have you here. And our other guest is Mrs. Fraser's husband, Mr. Gareth Fraser. He is a Philadelphia Church of God minister, and he is the son of the first international church member, the late Mr. Ron Fraser.
It's great to be here with you on the show.
Yes, it's great to have both of you. We're definitely testing the capabilities of our studio here in Edmond at the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, just trying to see how many guests we can have on at once. We're at two. Hopefully we can expand that in the future as well.
Great.
Well, let's get right into it. It's pretty exciting to have both of you here. Like I mentioned, Mr. Fraser, your father, Mr. Ron Fraser, was the first international member of the Philadelphia Church of God. He was also a PCG minister, a Philadelphia trumpet writer, and a Herbert W. Armstrong College instructor. What has he told you, and what do you remember about the early days of the PCG down in Australia?
Well, quite a bit he has told me, and you'll dust off my memory as I share some of that with you. A little background, as he read Malachi's message around February 1990, the first copy mailed internationally, and he contacted Mr. Fleury around March of that year and received a reply from Mr. Fleury in April 1990. And here's a paragraph of what Mr. Fleury wrote my father back then. "You were the first person outside North America to contact us, and you couldn't be further away geographically," which was so true down in the sunburnt country. The first feast in Australia was in 1990. That actually happened to be the first country Mr. Fleury visited outside of the United States. There were 15 PCG members then at that first feast. Six are still in the PCG. Three have died in the faith, and six others have left. Now, services began being conducted. I went from a congregation of 1,000 to 30 wooden chairs in my parents' living room. That was quite an adjustment that first Sabbath, as I recall, just from a size and scale and scope. The office was located in our home, which that's a fancy word for we used our ping pong table to mail out Malachi's messages. And they would be packaged there, and I'd put them in my orange Volkswagen, which seemed so cool and masculine then, and it's a vehicle I'd never drive now. But anyway, those Malachi's messages made it safely to the post office, and they were sent out all across Australia. And Dad was a deacon of 15 years up to that point. He was ordained a minister in 1991, and he served in the office and in Australia up until about 92, when Mr. Fleury transferred him to Britain, where he served Europe and Africa as well. And then I went over about a year later, and then Andrea came over also, and we worked in that regional office. So there's some memories that come to mind, and a few things, of course, he would share with us were that Malachi's message was a lifeline, was a lifeline. He started contributing to the church before my mother, and that created some friction from the get-go because she didn't know. These tithes were going out to another church. He came to the PCG before her, and then she had to prove out MM, just as we all individually had to do as well.
Yes, and just as an aside for all of our listeners, Mr. Fraser is thoroughly prepared today. He's got a lot of papers there in front of him, so he can certainly give us some authoritative background on what we're talking about today. I should also give more background. The PCG did start with a firing. That's how the church actually began. It's really the one true church that came out of the Worldwide Church of God. And when Mr. Gerald Fleury and Mr. John Amos were fired by the WCG because Mr. Fleury had written Malachi's message, which was critical of church leadership, that is the date that the church began. And so it had to start really small. A lot of people had to come along to, of course, support the work. But really, it just started with those two WCG ministers being fired. Like you said, then Mr. Ron Fraser was the first person outside of the United States to contact the church. And look where we are today. Ever since that firing and 29 years later, so much has changed. Well, you said that your father had then moved to Britain. Anything similar to what he did in Australia with trying to start things off the right way in a different country like that?
Oh, indeed. I remember going to the New Zealand office. I was able to work in the Australian office, the New Zealand office, and then the UK.
Of the PCG.
Of the PCG. Right. Initially in the UK, it was my parents' home. My office was – my filing cabinet was a bathtub, and my seat was the restroom seat, and my desk was the what would be the sink right there. So I had plenty of real estate, but the church grew in the United Kingdom, and we moved into a sizable office space in Hemel Hempstead. We had the blessing of running advertisements in the Daily Telegraph, a very well-known newspaper, in a slot reserved for the Concorde aircraft, if you might recall that transatlantic aircraft, and it would bring in 1,500 to 2,000 responses, and thus the generation of membership in the United Kingdom. And then ultimately we went on NBC Super Channel and expanded into foreign languages, where I served under Mr. Stephen Fleury, actually, in foreign language translation. And of course, I was so gifted for that because I spoke Australian and a little Japanese, which we didn't translate into.
There's definitely a language barrier there, even though we're all speaking English. Some people can struggle to understand across all the accents.
Very much so. Very much so. But the UK was integral to our marital counseling and dating. And to have Andrea over there to see the work growing in the United Kingdom was something extra special, as you say, with her background and her father's background in support of Mr. Fleury.
Right. And though your father wasn't an original 12 church member, he was, you could say, an original one when it comes to international members. And he had a huge role in starting things off in Australia, like you said, and also over in Britain. Your father often said something that I still think about almost every day. It had a huge impact on me when I was a student at Armstrong College. He said that the message of the PCG must be vastly different from every other religious or news source. That was the key phrase, vastly different. Why is this so important, and how can the church continue to stand out as vastly different?
Well, giving you a bit of background there, leading up to answering that, I'll quote from his autobiography, my father's, which is entitled Ron Fraser, A Life Story for His Grandchildren. And he writes, "I really began to seriously puzzle over the meaning of life. What was it really all about? I began to read the Bible with a degree of interest. One night, I twiddled the dial on my red and white portable AWA transistor radio in search of that preacher. I found myself listening to this American voice declaring very emphatically to listeners, 'Now don't believe me. Go blow the dust off your Bible and prove what I'm saying from the very pages of that book.' Yes," he writes, "it was Herbert W. Armstrong teaching the revelation of the prophecies of Ezekiel. I was intrigued. I went back night after night to listen to that challenging message of the World Tomorrow radio program beaming out nightly over 2KY Sydney, the radio station." Well, he began to read The Plain Truth in 61, became a member of the Radio Church of God soon afterwards. And the passion that he received from God through the power of his spirit really began with the first book he received, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, The Key of David Vision. And that went going out to over 5 million people. It impacted him greatly. And so in his writing and teaching and anything contributory into support of God's apostle of today and the commission of Revelation 10, verse 11, to prophesy again, he understood that the message, like The Plain Truth, was a magazine of understanding. It could not be just straight news. It had to be analysis from the very pages of the Bible and the revealed truth that God had revealed through his end time Elijah, this work today is the Elijah work. And he'd often reiterate to trumpet writers, younger writers, that their writing must be rooted in that Key of David vision and from the revealed prophecies, and not of a self-devised analysis of news, but from the more sure word of prophecy. And like we used to introduce the Key of David, it's the Key of David that unlocks all Bible prophecy of the past, the present, and the beautiful world to come. And so he'd emphasize in our home the importance of headlines of hope, and reiterate that Mr. Armstrong made that point. Give them a headline of hope, cite the problem, and provide the solution, bringing them along to committing their lives to the work, those of which God was calling, or those of which who were co-workers. But all along, his support for that message and making it different in support of Mr. Flory really, in my mind, revolved around Jeremiah 31:22, which talks about the woman or the church surrounding God's man. So that when he spoke about this vastly different message, there's nothing that can compare in this world cut off to fake news, a.k.a. CNN or MSNBC or any of the other radical leftist blue-collar stations, if you will, where the Constitution is shredded down the KitchenAid and the gurgler, and there's just no semblance of law and order and repentance and change and growth. And so till his dying breath, this very message that he first heard on the radio there in Australia really translated into who and what he was in support of particularly Mystery of the Ages and Malachi's message.
You mentioned Herbert W. Armstrong there, who of course was the physical head of God's church until he died on January 16th, 1986. And you mentioned how God's one true church does revolve around one human leader, and it was Mr. Armstrong while he was alive. Mm-hmm. And that's something that makes God's church vastly different from any other place. And like you mentioned there with fake news, a lot of different sources, at least more on the conservative side now, are calling that out. But what authority do they really have? I mean, what makes God's church's message different from all those other sources? That's something like you mentioned there, the hope that is brought into it is way different when it's coming from God's church versus any old newspaper out there. There has to be just a staggering authority, a spiritual authority behind that, or else it just falls short. It lacks inspiration. People will just get frustrated reading the bad news and move on. Isn't that what so many people say? They just don't want to hear the bad news anymore.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's reminiscent of, I grew up in a home where God's end time Elijah, the office, not the man exclusively, was held in great reverence. And that message that would reach world leaders, where he'd say, your physical problems in your country only have spiritual solutions. He talked to them of another power coming and dominating their whole country, and they'd applaud him and say, come on back and tell us again, our country will be taken over by an unseen hand from someplace. But the spiritual solutions to mankind's problems truly set apart the trumpet of today and the plain truth of yesteryear. We are that message of today, and there is nowhere else where it can be found, not in any other splinter group, because it's founded upon that more sure word of prophecy, as you brought out. And without Malachi's message to show us the way, where would we be? And you remind me of Mr. Flory and Mr. Amos writing in that first Philadelphia Trumpet magazine.
Right. Well, I'm speaking with Mr. Gareth Fraser, the son of the late Mr. Ron Fraser, and you just mentioned there a lot of the respect that your father had for Mr. Armstrong. So that probably partially answers some of my next question. Mr. Fraser did die in 2013. What is his lasting legacy?
Well, that's a good point you're bringing out. That's something that translates into his children and his grandchildren, and that is a reverence of the office of the one. There is only one God servant God is using in this end time. And, you know, that Key of David vision, again, as I mentioned with the United States and Britain in prophecy, the Elijah work, that we're connected. The sixth and the seventh eras are directly connected. And as the introduction of your program bore out, and Mr. Flory, I think, was noted to say there, once you've won this court case, you declare this message. And that is what we're all about. And if there's any legacy, Grant, that I'd like to share with your listeners, it would remind me of Luke 21:36, watch you therefore and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. If there's any great legacy, perhaps, that my father's left behind, it is you better support what God is doing through his one man that he uses at any time. And he knew full well he'd be resurrected in power very shortly at the return of Jesus Christ to continue that on from headquarters at Jerusalem.
Well, that's one thing I definitely remember about Mr. Ron Fraser as well. He was really known as an expert, especially when it came to watching Europe and Germany, watching and praying. As you said there, that's a huge part of doing God's work.
Very much so. Very much so. Big eye on the King of the North, as you mentioned, and the Great Falls Church.
Right. Well, we'll turn to our other guest today. Like I said in the introduction, she's an original 12 church member and the daughter of the late John and Helen Amos. Thank you so much for coming on, Mrs. Fraser. Well, like I said earlier, your father and Mr. Gerald Fleury were fired from their positions as Worldwide Church of God ministers on December 7th, 1989, marking the beginning of the PCG. What do you recall from that time period?
Well, I was 17 years old, so I was the youngest of the 12, and it was an exciting time. I was so involved in the YOU, and I loved everything about it. And being 17, I was so close to applying for AC and getting ready for that and thinking about what my future would be. And then everything changed, and from that point on, I never looked back, never had any regrets as far as, oh, I could have done this or it could have been this way. In my mind, I really just looked forward, and I think my parents had a huge part in that. And from memory, it was just an exciting time, and my dad's excitement just really seemed to have a calming effect on our family. And I just remember him really looking forward to always what was going to come next. And in that time, it was seemed a lot of unknowns, you know, what would happen next. But he was, at the same time, he was really realistic, and he was unsure how he was going to support the family financially. He was just about to turn 61. So most people at that time in their life are looking to retire.
Right.
But he didn't seem at all worried at the same time. And I feel like that, looking back on it, I can see that that was his faith. And it really just amazes me, you know, the faith that he had to step out like that. And he also knew that, you know, God was taking care of his church. And he, like I said, he didn't seem stressed or worried mm-hmm. about it. And he didn't know exactly how God would take care of everything and what would happen next, but he knew who was being used by God to go further, obviously, after the changes in the church. And he knew who God was using and revealing his truth to. So at the same time, he was happy, and he seemed very relieved. So that's basically within our family, mm-hmm. Things that I remember personally.
Okay, great. So at the time, Mr. John Amos was a minister in the Worldwide Church of God, and he was serving in Oklahoma. Do you remember how big that congregation was? Like, how many people, maybe? Probably at least several hundred, right?
Several hundred from memory, and we came from Columbus, Ohio, so that church area was bigger, and I believe we had 100 at that point. So moving to Oklahoma City, it was a little smaller, I want to say. Maybe about half of that, maybe about 50 YOU teens. And
that's a big change for someone from your perspective when you're 17 years old. And it seems like one day you have dozens of friends in the church that you can hang out with pretty much whenever you want to, probably. And then the next day your father gets fired and 9 days later, you're going to the first Philadelphia Church of God church service, and there's 12 people total, and only, what, two or three of them are remotely close to your age?
Yeah.
And one of them was your brother, too.
Yes. Thankfully, I had a brother, and then your mom as well. She was... we spent a lot of time together after that day of December 7th, and we became closer. And like I said, it was exciting. I never look back, and I just think, now that I'm older, I just think, wow, that's really... I mean, our teens today, I just feel like, you know, if they had to leave everything they know now, it would be a pretty big ask. But for me, I just, obviously God helped me get through it, and I just always looked forward to what was next and didn't have any regrets.
Well, it's inspiring to hear about the mindset of your family, that your father was so relaxed, probably even more so after he got fired, because at least then the situation was dealt with. And even though you were about to probably have a chance to go to Ambassador College, which was really a nationally and internationally acclaimed group of three colleges in the Worldwide Church of God, you didn't seem to really regret missing out on that opportunity. So that really does show a really great mentality, an inspiring example from your family during that time. Like I just mentioned a few minutes ago, the 29-year anniversary of the first PCG Sabbath service was 9 days after the church started, so December 16th, which was just yesterday. What was that first church meeting like in Oklahoma?
Well, from my point of view, I remember everyone that was there was just happy and filled with anticipation for what would come next, and we would talk for hours in fellowship, especially after services, and we'd always look forward to what Mr. Fleury would tell us next in a sermon, and we were just so excited for God's work, even though it was just the 12 of us, and obviously that didn't last for long, so we always look forward to, you know, like I said, what would happen next, and how long would the church the work go on for, and who would be the next people to come in. And we always talked about, well, if this person gets Malachi's message, I hope they see the changes and they see what's going on and then actually make a move and take action on what they received and the revelation that Mr. Fleury was giving us just every week, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember that first Sabbath service, December 16th, 1989. Do you remember if Mr. Fleury and Mr. Amos both spoke on that day?
I don't remember.
That's a tough question to ask.
I'll have to ask one of the other 12.
Well, it is.
I'm pretty sure Mr. Fleury did, though.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Well, that's even unique when you look at a lot of small congregations in the church today. A lot of the messages that they hear are on recording, but because you were the only ones and you had two ministers out of the 12 people there, you know, you have a pretty good ratio in terms of ministers to members. A lot of spiritual help being provided to all of you. So definitely a lot of advantages from early on in the church there. Over the years, Mr. Gerald Fleury has often praised your father, Mr. John Amos, who died back in 1993. In fact, the first building constructed here on the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus in Edmond, Oklahoma, was the John Amos Fieldhouse. His wife, Mrs. Helen Amos, died just last year. How would you like our listeners to remember these true Christian pioneers? And Mr. Fraser, if you have anything to add, you did speak at Mrs. Amos's memorial service. You wrote a great article about why we should remember Mr. John Amos, too. So I'm sure if you have something to add, you should definitely go ahead and do that.
Well, I have two main thoughts that came to my mind when I was thinking about how to answer this question. But the first one that came to mind was loyalty, and his loyalty to God's work and his people And then, in turn, his loyalty to God's man that he saw, he knew, and obviously had the faith to know that Mr. Fleury was the man that God chose to give that message, and obviously started with Malachi's message. And he set such a great example of loyalty, and I feel like that's a characteristic that can never be underestimated, the power of loyalty.
Well, that's a good point. And as you asked, Grant, my mother-in-law was greatly impacted by that. The listeners need to understand, you know, Mrs. Barbara Jean Fleury nor Mrs. Helen Amos just followed their husbands. They proved this from the Bible. And I know my mother-in-law really had some serious questions to ask of Malachi's message. And as she read it and got more deeply into it, she knew this message, I believe the quote is, that she said, is she knew this message was from God. And Mom gave her life to the work. There was nothing more wonderful than driving behind those first vehicles that we had in the PCG and seeing Mrs. Amos and Mrs. Fleury with their specialized haircuts driving down towards Edmond. These dedicated, loyal, lovely women, and they are pioneers, and they are to be remembered and revered and honored because they just held up the arms of their husbands. They remember, they had $80 and a yellow truck and no money. And so that loyalty, as you bring out, Andrea, is truly something to behold.
This really is some astounding, great history for us to remember, especially so close to December 7th, which is the anniversary of the Philadelphia Church of God. I've been speaking today with Mr. Gareth Fraser and his wife, Mrs. Andrea Fraser. Thank you so much for coming on. Mr. Fraser, little known fact, you've actually been on the air with me on three different radio programs now, because this is Behind the Work. You've also been on with Trumpet Bookshelf, and back in the good old days with Mr. Falk and myself with Trumpet Radio Live, you were on there too. So you've completed the trifecta. No one else has done more than one of our shows.
Well, I guess this is my day of retirement today, and so thank you all, and goodbye.
All right, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon, and we'll talk to you again next Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.